And our final speaker for this morning's session is Colin Poole. Colin is the acting director of WCS's Asia program and a leading expert on birds of Southeast and East Asia. He received his bachelor's in ecology at the University of East Anglia and a master's in environment and development at the University of London School of Oriental and African Studies. For 5 years, he directed WCS's Cambodia program, which he set up and coordinated with government ministries in order to conduct wildlife surveys, establish conservation priorities, and implement training programs to assist Cambodians in managing their own natural resources. Colin is a former chair of the Oriental Bird Club and has written extensively on Cambodia's wildlife, particularly birds. He is co-author of an illustrated Khmer language guide to the birds of Cambodia, the first ever Khmer language publication on any aspect of biodiversity or conservation. In February 2003, the Royal Cambodian Government awarded Colin a Knight of the Order of
Sahamat Prai.
That's what it was. the first conservationist ever to be awarded. Please join me in thanking.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here today with such a distinguished panel of people talking about avian influenza. It's something that, as a conservationist, for the last 12 months or so, I've sat and watched and become involved in Cambodia, and it's become increasing concern to the work that we do. So I wanted to give you my perspective on what the conservation issues were and what's been happening thus far. The greatest concern, I think, to conservationists throughout Southeast Asia has been the fact that there's been one immediate reaction that affects us, is that people blame wild birds. People blame wild birds as transmitting the virus. What's the reaction? They must be killed, controlled. I should say here that I am talking about H5N1, the highly pathogenic avian influenza, specifically. So what happens? The Prime Minister of Thailand comes out and says, we must kill storks. The Wildlife Reserves Authorities of Singapore come out and say, we're culling crows and miners, we're going to catch migratory birds, we're going to clip their wings, we're going to prevent them from flying in order to stop the spread of the disease. Authorities in China, I think, have done similar things. Various other reactions that have got conservation implications. Destruction of habitat. In Thailand, they've been out chopping down trees where open-billed storks nest. If you're worried about these birds actually transmitting the virus, that's probably the worst thing you should do. What happens when you chop a nesting tree down? The bird flies somewhere else. I read about a school in Hong Kong cutting down a tree in their grounds because they were scared that birds were going to perch in the tree and infect children. Throughout the region, people have been releasing their pet birds. I'm suddenly scared my pet bird's going to have avian influenza. I'll let it out of the cage and let it fly away. Colleagues of mine in Ho Chi Minh City and Vientiane in Bangkok were suddenly seeing ornamental pet birds, exotic species flying around the city they hadn't seen before. People were releasing them. They were scared. And all over the region, people were told, stay away from birds. Don't go to nature reserves. They closed nature reserves in places. Environmental education classes for kids. Anything that involved birds, going to nature reserves, we'll stop it. It's too dangerous. And for the first time ever, in whatever I've seen, people were scared of birds. Birds became an enemy throughout the region. Which, if you think about, especially young people growing up, thinking about the environment, conservation, they've been told to be scared of birds. So what was the evidence for this? As we've heard this morning, avian influenza viruses in wild birds, particularly ducks, endemic. But H5N1, the highly pathogenic virus we're talking about as being the primary issue in Asia at the moment, has to date been found in only 7 wild birds, 7 individuals of 6 species. How many birds have been tested, wild birds? I don't know, I can't find out. I've read that more than 6,000 wild birds were tested in Hong Kong. Certainly birds were tested in China, Thailand, Philippines, Singapore. How many? I don't know, but an awful lot. And we've only found H5N1 in 7 birds. None of the results have been published. I don't know where they are or whether they're accessible. I understand, certainly the open-bill storks in Thailand, they were negative. They haven't found any open-bill storks with H5N1. And I understand all the birds tested thus far in Singapore have all been negative. So my assumption is, until I'm told differently, that all the tests that have been done, we've only found 7 individual birds carrying H5N1 in Asia. So those 7 birds, this is based on a paper which was cited earlier, from Hong Kong, published in Nature earlier this year, and it says, I just pulled that quote out, the presence of H5N1 viruses in dead migratory birds suggests that wild bird populations may be involved. So let's look at the data. I pulled the species out from that paper, 6 species, 7 birds, and I went through them to try and work out, okay, what was migratory, what wasn't, what was carrying the virus. There's the list. Only one of those species is a migratory species. The top one could be or couldn't be. They don't actually label the race of the peregrine falcon involved, so I can't tell. I then went through on the right to try and find out where these birds have come from. And again, this hasn't been published that I can find, but people that I know and sources that I found out, the peregrine falcon was found near 2 poultry farms. The egrets, the black-headed gull, I don't know. The tree sparrow and the feral pigeon were from a quarantine area where there were dying ducks and geese. So, certainly, dead migratory birds, plural. Well, I would certainly make that singular, a dead migratory bird. But there's not much evidence there that there's H5N1 in migratory birds. The other evidence, they quote, is looking at patterns of incidents in poultry in southern China and comparing that to temperature. So the blue line on that graph is temperature over a period of years. The purple and blue bars at the bottom are incidences of H5N1 in domestic poultry in southern China. And you can see there is a peak each winter. They hypothesised based on that that the timing and distribution coincided with that of the appearance of migratory birds, wintering birds, in southern China. Okay, it looks quite neat. And I can't disagree with that, that it happens in winter, and there are migratory birds in southern China in winter. But then we look at patterns across the rest of the region. Does it fit? There are no waterfowl that spend the winter in southern China and then move on to Thailand, southern Vietnam, Cambodia, Indonesia. Ignore Pakistan, I just found out this morning that's not H5N1. But it doesn't fit. There are no migratory species that could have taken the virus from southern China in winter to these other places. Not just waterfowl. There aren't any migratory birds at all that follow these routes. And I mean, take it one stage further. Look at ecologically what birds might mix with poultry farms in southern China. And then look at which of those birds migrate. And you can discount huge numbers of migratory birds. I've seen slides this morning in newspapers of plovers and sandpipers and shorebird networks going to Australia. None of these birds ever get near poultry farms in southern China. They're not going to be carrying risk transmitting between poultry farms and wild populations. So you've got to think about the ecological links here as well in terms of these species. As far as I can see, it's far more likely that that graph was due to the fact that in winter, you take your poultry, put it inside, put it in houses, you compress it, it's damp, it's unhygienic, you're going to get increased incidences of influenza. And in terms of it moving, the international movement of poultry and other birds in trade is far more serious than the movement of migratory birds. So, as far as I'm concerned, all the evidence that I can find points to wild birds not as a vector, but as a victim. And the main threat to birds across the region right now is persecution from poorly informed decision makers. The issues come down to, in many ways, we've talked about before, separation of wild and domestic birds. And I split this up in two ways. Live wildlife markets found across the region. Birds are packed very close together, multi-species groups. Domestic and wild birds are put together in very close proximity, often transported long distances. Even in rural areas, a hunter might go out, catch a bird, brings it back, keeps it under his house for a day or two before he takes it to market. He's got chickens and ducks there. So even in rural areas, it happens. You take them to the major town, you've got birds coming from all over the region, maybe the country. In places like Bangkok, you've got bird markets, but birds are coming from all over the world. I go to a market in Bangkok, there's birds from South America, from Australia, from Africa, mixed with local Thai birds, with domestic birds, all together. What in Asia they call wet markets, these live markets, are an international viral exchange. And the poultry industry. From my point of view, thinking about the way migratory birds function, the idea that there are migratory birds that are going to move the virus from a poultry facility, long distance, it doesn't work. There are really no long distance migratory birds that come in close contact with poultry. The real risk is from resident birds, sparrows, starlings, pigeons, that sort of thing, which do move in and out of facilities, might spread, might transmit the virus, but this is local, this is not long distance migration. One of the issues that concerns me thinking about these things from a human health perspective is there's a practice that's common throughout Asia of catching birds for release for merit. It's a Buddhist practice. Primarily the birds involved are small birds like this. This is a picture somebody took in Phnom Penh. These are sparrows, a lot of them. These are birds that live on farms. They're caught from around the rural areas, around Phnom Penh, brought to the city, and people release them for merit. They're brought together in small cages. And what do people do when they release them? They bring them to the face, and then they go like that. If this is a respiratory issue, this is a big danger. These birds are coming from areas where there are poultry farms. These birds can go in and out of poultry farms quite happily. I think if we're thinking about risk to human health, this sort of thing is a serious issue. But I've discussed this with Cambodian government officials. This is a very difficult thing to manage, to close down. This is a religious practice. The king does this every week. You know, you can't stop this something overnight. So after all that, there have been some positive implications for conservation in the region. SARS, more than avian influenza, caused the Chinese government to really crack down on these markets, on the trade. They closed down these wet markets within a period of weeks. They were able to do that because they were scared about the implications for human health. Now, since SARS has kind of dropped off the agenda, these markets have all opened up again and they're starting again. But it was done. It's possible. People became more reluctant to eat wild birds. Scared of them, don't want to eat them, don't hunt them, don't buy them. So there was a drop in demand, which is a good thing. And the trade, not only in poultry, but a whole range of birds was limited, restricted. Again, within the region, a lot of these things are starting to happen again, but certainly the United States, the European Union, Australia are still, as far as I'm aware, banning imports of all birds, whether it's pet birds, whatever, from Southeast Asia. So that's a positive measure. So having said all that, what are the ways forward for conservation? I split it up in three ways in terms of how I see this. Firstly, we have to keep working to stop the killing. It doesn't make sense. And potentially could, as Ken said earlier with the badger example, what effect does killing have? It could, even if they were transmitting agents, it could have completely the opposite effect of what you're looking for. We need more focused education of decision makers, of the general public, as to what the real risks are. And we need a greater understanding, we need more data, we need to go out there and find out. I talk to Cambodian government officials and they say, well, where's your evidence? We don't have a lot of data as yet. The data that's been collected from thousands and thousands of wild birds that have been tested by governments, I'd like to see more transparency in that available to people to use, and we can take that to decision makers. I think we as conservationists can seize the moment, linking the things that we care about to global issues of human health, thinking about combining with a human health argument, let's start thinking about closing down wildlife markets. These are a great concern to us as conservationists. Wildlife trade is the biggest threat to biodiversity in Asia. There are a big issue with human health. Let's see if we can't close down some of these wildlife markets, restrict some of the wildlife trade. Within reason, I mean, it's not a black and white issue. A lot of countries have very good existing laws. Let's see if we can support governments to enforce those laws better. And again, we need more information. We've got some ideas about markets and what birds go from where to where, and what animals move around, but we don't really know. A lot of this trade is semi-legal, some of it very underground. We need to better understand how that works, the dynamics, where birds are coming from, where they're going to, what the risks are. And finally, I think we should be thinking, as conservationists, trying to be ahead of the curve. What would happen if H5N1 got into something that we were thought was a very important colony of a very globally endangered bird? Would it wipe it out? I don't know. So we need to think about better biosecurity, I think, in the poultry industry. How can we stop the virus jumping from where its source is for H5N1 into wild birds? I don't know about issues of vaccination. Could we be thinking about, in areas we're particularly worried about particular colonies or groups of endangered birds, could we be thinking about trying to vaccinate poultry and things in that immediate area as a preventative measure? I don't know. Thinking about these markets where wild birds are actually released. We probably can't close them down, but how do we start to think about dealing with people releasing small birds back into the environment? These are small birds that come together. Who knows what transmissions have gone on? They're being released again. And do we need to think about monitoring the health of wild bird populations? Quite what we do if we found suddenly we had H5N1 in a whole population of birds, I don't know. But do we need to be thinking about that? So those, to me, are the ways forward and things as conservationists we should be addressing. And I wanted to end with a stop press. This is such a field that's moving all the time. Things are happening as we speak. But I just wanted to give you an example of something that's been going on in the last week that I'm familiar with, and I've just been tracking it over the internet over the last few days. So last week, chickens started dying on a farm outside of Phnom Penh. A few days later, they declared an outbreak of bird flu. I think 2,000 chickens had died already. They slaughtered another 2,200. The next day, wild birds were blamed. And what's more, implicated by somebody from FAO. And I look at that and I think, I know where this farm is, within a few miles. I know exactly where this farm is. There are no wild birds which would be using this pond, apart from probably sparrows. There are certainly no wild migratory waterfowl or anything like that. It's just, they're not there. Ecologically, they don't use this system where these farms are. So the idea that wild ducks were involved, as an ecologist, is nonsensical. Same day, the Cambodian government reported that the chickens were bought from a Thai farm. Big political issue here, rivalry between Cambodia and Thailand. They probably enjoyed saying that. That was a good thing for them. Next day, the Thai company denies responsibility. The CP Group is probably the largest poultry farmer in Southeast Asia. Big, big Thai conglomerate. They don't want anything to do with it. They deny responsibility. And the last thing was, now they think it's probably likely to do with unclean water and movement of birds within Cambodia, infected birds. And that's probably a more sensible reason. I'm quite sure there's lots of poultry dying across Cambodia which never gets tested. Nobody realises it's got H5N1. They move it around. This is bound to happen. So I haven't yet checked the internet today, so I don't know what the latest one is, but these things keep moving. Thank you very much.